Welcome. I'd like to acknowledge the continuing sovereignty of all First Nations peoples right across the country. I'd also like to acknowledge elders, elders of the First Peoples of the land, and elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to each and every one of you. And welcome to all our listeners tuned in across the country by the National Indigenous Radio Service and across the world by the World Wide Web. Welcome to you. It's great to have your company. Well, we've got live in the studio three young First Nations peoples, starting with the young woman of the group, Larissa Baldwin Roberts. Welcome to the studio. How are you, Larissa?
I'm good.
Where's your mic? That one. What'd you say?
I'm good.
You're good? Right,
yeah.
Right. Tell us your mob, your country.
I'm a Bundjalung woman. Grew up down in Lismore. All my family's back down there still, but yeah, living in Brisbane right now.
Big mob? Roberts mob?
Big mob.
Yes. And we've got Clayton. I didn't get just. Yes, I did. Clayton Simpson.
All right.
Who's your mob, your country?
Oh, yeah, I'm Yeralaroi Gamilaroi from. I was born and bred in Walgett, New South Wales, but yeah, I got all mob up by Bree Warriner and Maury.
All around northwest New South
Wales?
Yeah,
all around up that way.
Yeah.
But now I live in Darwin. I've been living up there since August, and I'm doing my bachelor in I'm doing my bachelor degree in Aboriginal advocacy. Majoring in social policy and community advocacy.
Bachelor degree in Aboriginal advocacy.
Yeah, it's
really
it's a mad degree up at Charles Darwin Uni and the Bachelor Institute.
You added bachelor there.
Yeah. It's between the both of them, but I think it's a unique degree.
Yeah.
There's stuff that we do in there. It's just all on black politics and it's mad.
How good's that?
Yeah, and if you've been brought up around stuff and you've got family members that have big activists back in the days, and I feel like it's me to continue that passion.
Good on you. Yeah.
But, yeah.
Well, it's very encouraging hearing you young fellow stories, especially studying a bachelor's degree in Aboriginal advocacy.
Yeah.
Oh, gee. it wasn't a degree course when I was studying. It was on the street and getting bashed by cops. And going, that was my degree.
Right? Yeah,
eh? Learning from experience.
Yeah, that's still around today too.
Good to see. And Caleb Scanlon, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I'm very, very good.
And who's your mob and company?
I'm another Gimilori boy. So I got to talk to my aunties and stuff and know where exactly we're from, but one day I hope to go back to country, and right now I'm living in Gubby Gubby land out just outside of Brisbane and stuff like that. So it's a really, really beautiful place to live in,
sure,
which is what I'm fighting for.
Yeah, sure is. You guys are part of, first of all, Caleb, your Koori family.
Mm.
Who are they? Which mob?
I'm Knox mob.
Knox
so
mob.
My grandma was a Knox, and she was... cousins with Jimmy Little and all the other old Knoxes and stuff like that. So I felt really good because I was at Musgrave, and I said, "Oh, I'm a Knox," and then all of a sudden there's 50 other Knoxes. There's 50 other Knoxes, and we're all there just having a family celebration, family reunion.
Good feeling, eh?
Yeah, it's a really good feeling, and the family's very close knit. Even a close family's close knit, but further family's close knit as well, and it's something of a pride for myself to always see or always be close and with the family.
Mm. You all look like young people. Yeah, young people. I mean, I'm 62 next birthday, so you're young people. Mm. You're younger than 50, you're going to be a young fella to me. How old are you?
16.
All right. And Larissa, how old are you?
28.
Oh, you're getting on a bit, girl.
I'm not old.
Yeah, man, getting on a bit.
Nah, she's only 18.
I'm 21.
Okay, yeah. No, it's encouraging to be able to have young people that regard activism and political involvement. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily like the term activist. It's used in a negative. It has negative connotations from a white perspective.
Yep. Especially in Aboriginal activists.
In Aboriginal activists, when in fact we do the same work as them damn white politicians, but we're activists.
Yep.
You know, when we're organising, mobilising, politicising our mob, and in some cases and times we have to represent our mob and stuff when they want us to, but we're activists. It's got a negative connotation for me. And I can't find a word that's appropriate. I haven't thought about it too much. I just complain about what I don't like and don't think about how I come up with what I do like. But anyway, what's more appropriate? Back to Walgett, they won the the footy. Yes,
in Dubbo this next year.
Oh, they've decided to go to Dubbo because there are a few hands up in the air for contenders.
I had a bit of an opinion on that.
Yeah,
I thought I should go back home, but
it's going
to Dubbo. At least it's close to home, though.
Do they have the infrastructure? That's the big issue. Can they handle 20?
Well, apparently Dubbo's.
Doubt if they do.
Apparently Dubbo's already booked out.
Right.
All the motels and that there, but
because of the knockout.
Yeah. So it's going to be big next year, I definitely don't have the infrastructure, but I thought that, in my opinion, I was hopeful that, they could have logistically planned it all at the start so Walga could, pave the way for the other country towns
that are in
the knockout.
Fair enough. Good to see an opinion.
But at least going, it's not on the coast, it's, in Dubbo, and we all go to Dubbo for shopping. And
well, there's been a few held in Dubbo over the years. I lived in Dubbo for a while back in 1990 or something.
Mm.
Good to see. And if it was in Walgett, they'd have, even in Dubbo, they're going to have coppers from every town in New South Wales will be converging on Dubbo to keep control of those wild blacks that gather down
there.
Well,
even when we have the Dubbo Waratahs knockout there a week before the big one.
Mm. More coppers and people attending.
Oh, yeah, sort of, but even going out and that, you're lucky to get into a club.
They're
bad, all right.
They're bad, all right. But there are some good ones.
There are some good ones.
They are a minority in
they
the
are.
Force. They are a minority. But I've met a couple of good ones along the way, thank God. Now, your organisation, tell us, Larissa, SEED.
So SEED is the first Indigenous Youth Climate Network. It's just young people, young black people fighting for climate justice in our communities, getting out, spreading the word. A lot of people come to SEED just because we have that connection in country and that sort of stuff, and there's a lot of things going on with climate change that aren't necessarily getting filtered down to our communities by the government, but there's a lot of reports coming out saying climate change is going to affect our communities first and worst, compared to other Australians.
And is SEED the First Nations, or SEED is the national one and then the First Nations representation comes in under that? Because you've got
AYCC is the national one.
AYCC, so the Australian Youth Climate Coalition,
is
one of the largest youth coalitions in Australia. And we partnered with them. It's not a program of AYCC. That would be a little bit tokenistic. We're our own body and they support us to, do our own campaigns and that sort of stuff. So we work together.
Mm.
It's not a little reconciliation action plan. It's actually reconciliation working together.
Oh, haven't you got a reconciliation action plan?
No, we don't have that. We just tell them what we're doing.
I've got my own opinion on them things too, don't you worry. But we won't go there right now. Some people have good intentions, but what's that old saying? The road to somewhere or other is paved with good intentions. The road to hell or heaven or somewhere like that. But anyway, I've got my own thoughts on RAPs. Some people are genuine and others are just it's something that they can feel good about and they sit on the shelf and mean nothing, do nothing about them.
We do stuff for blackfellas here.
Yeah, that's it.
Tick
we
the boxes.
Well, it's good,
tick and flick.
Working together because there's a lot of non-Indigenous young people out there who are like, how do I help? How do I get involved in that sort of stuff? So What can I do? And it's like, well, we'll lead the charge. And then they're like, we'll stand in solidarity with you. And, it's really empowering our young people. And in SEED, I work as one of the mentors. So I work for the AYCC as a Brisbane community campaigner.
All right.
And part of my job is to mentor the NT mob and the Queensland mob around the campaigns that they want to run and how they get out to communities and teaching them skills and that sort of stuff to talk to community and be more grassroots.
How long have you been involved?
Probably from 18 months ago, but I've been employed by the AYCC from this year.
Right, yeah. Okay. And why climate change? I mean, there's all sorts of things. There's reconciliation, gammon.
reconciliation.
As Foley says, reconciliation. But yeah, why climate change?
Because I feel like climate change is the most important thing that we could be fighting for right now.
Your Prime Minister for Aboriginal people doesn't think so.
Yeah, gammon, we don't care what he thinks.
Again, gammon again.
You know, we had Obama come out here and say,
yes,
you know, if for our government and our Prime Minister to be saying it's crap when it's already affecting Aboriginal people, it's already affecting Torres Strait Islander people, they already have to build a $23 million seawall. You know, people think that the Torres Strait Islander can lose their country and it's okay because they can just come to the mainland. It's not like that. They can't. That's their way of life. That's their culture.
It's
and
their home country. And for Obama to come out, what do you think of that with his little comment?
Well, he did us a favour, like, in getting our message out there. But, yeah, we just want to get out and talk to community and talk about, you know, there are viable options. And a lot of communities don't want to sell their country to mining and fracking. So it's like the government is just not putting up a viable option and saying, hey, actually there's jobs in community with renewable energy that will employ more Aboriginal people and, like, we could have ownership over.
I think it comes back to, too, you know, with the whole renewable energy stuff, especially with Blackfalls, it's all about caring for country, you know, continuing to care for country in a modern world that we live in. But, yeah, I think with climate change, too, it's the, you know, it's the topic of the world that everyone's talking about and it's been talking about for years, but we're the country that's obsessed with mining and obsessed with, you know, all that stuff. And, yeah, that's what...
And in the eventuality, you can't base an economy on a finite resource. That's like taking a block of cheese and then saying, I can feed my whole family with this block of cheese forever. You can't fucking do that. They'll eat for a day. Sorry,
hey,
language.
You're on radio now. Yeah,
sorry.
Right.
But okay.
I'll accept your apology.
It's something that just gets me really riled up. But it's just, you can't do stuff like that. That's and then when your family says, I'm hungry, please feed me, you don't go and bury your head in the sand. That's not what you do. You listen to your family and go, oh, right, well, our cheese has run out. We'll go and get some stuff. And we'll go get some kangaroos and we'll go to the supermarket. We won't stay with the cheese.
We'll go and pinch someone else's cheese, yeah.
That's right.
Yes. It's a good way you put it, lad. It's a good way you put it.
Good metaphor.
It's like one of the things that we talked about when we had our first summit this year and we brought together 50 young people and a lot of them were concerned about, we have the right to practice culture on our country. If we don't have our country, then we lose part of our culture. And this is a threat to our younger generation. Like, if we lose our country, then where do we practice our culture? You know, you have in the Kimberley where mining companies are coming in and saying the song lines have moved. They haven't moved. They've been in the same place for long before you were here. Yeah.
That's right. Considering that First Nations peoples are the oldest surviving race of people in the world, the oldest culture in the world, and climate change, the term climate change, could it be seen as, is it really climate change or is it another natural part of nature's cycles? Like, I've seen, I don't know how many ice ages, but you know what I'm saying? There's been those cycles that happen every 10,000 or what years, I don't know. Do you think there's a link there? There's a part of that, but there's also, or is there a contributing factor with the way the modern world, the industrialised world, is just hammering Mother Nature to death sort of thing.
I think there's two good points there. Like, climate deniers like to come out and say, like, there's a natural variance and that sort of stuff and every so often that these things happen. But the thing is, people look at a scale of an incline and they say, oh, there's these little flat little increments where, you know, it's gotten hotter and that sort of stuff. But when you say, like, industrial revolution, since that's happened, it's just spiked and there's no correlation there to the rest of the graph that's been there for, like, hundreds and hundreds of years of to say that it's just a natural variance. Like, it's pretty clear if you actually looked at the graph on a piece of paper that there has been a really significant spike. And it's not just, you know, you can look at graphs and statistics and that sort of stuff, but we talked to different TOs from around the country and they're talking about this is affecting a lot of the stuff that, you know, in our Dreamtime stories, well, a lot of these animals and that sort of stuff, that it's affecting their breeding cycles. Mm-hmm. It's affecting our water supply.
Yep.
You don't need a graph to see that.
Yep.
We lived on this country.
It's written in there.
That's right.
Like last time I went out fishing in Wagga, back home in Wagga now, we've got this competition that the council runs where you get as many carp in the river, many as you can, you know.
Try and hook the biggest number of carp.
Yeah. And my cousin won it there.
Yeah.
A couple of fishing rods. But anyways, yeah, so they do that just so, you know, there's more carp in the river now than yellowbelly. And I'm sure if you look back at why it's because of the, you look at the Pilliga scrub, what they're doing there now with the coal seam gas. And not only that, the carp and the yellowbelly are a little blood clots and that all
right,
over
they're
there.
They're showing signs of
they're not
sickness
healthy
and stuff. Yeah.
And it's from the coal seam gas mine and what's happening out at Pilliga. Not only that, they're looking at big uranium mining, especially up western New South Wales now, and Australia's got the biggest deposits of uranium, and what do you need uranium for? We need it for war.
Mm.
We need it for nuclear bombs. We need it, you know. We need it for,
Not for good things.
No, not for good things. Definitely not for good things. And where do
then again, who was the idiot that said, nuclear power is clean and green? And was it Howard, I think?
If he wants it in his backyard, he can have it.
Yeah, exactly. And then they got to find a waste dump, you know?
Yeah.
But where do they put the waste?
Try and put on Blackwater Country and stuff like
that. Put it out Muckety. That's
the problem with nuclear power as well is a sister girl from Tasmania was talking about the native birds of Tasmania that the Aboriginal people had harvested there, that they were their main food supply. And what the birds would do would migrate up to Japan for winter, for summer, and come back to Australia for summer. So they're a migratory bird. And they'd migrate up to where the Fukushima disaster had happened. And they'd get all this nuclear waste infecting them and deforming them and making them inedible for the people in Tasmania. But the indigenous people didn't know at the time. So all these birds infected with nuclear waste were coming back down to Tasmania, and the indigenous people were still eating them. And they were still eating them until they finally realised, hang on, something's wrong here. And it's stuff like that where it's a modern impact done by modern society that's come and also impacted in First Nations societies as well. It happened as well. We had a Navajo, a First Nations lady from the Navajo tribe, come from America and talk to us at the Seed Summit. And she talked about how there was an 80-mile-long nuclear spill, and the white people that had allowed the spill to happen did not inform the First Nations people of her tribe, so they were all drinking water from this creek that it had spilled into. And all her family's now got different cancers and stuff, and she's got cancer. And that just doesn't come out of the blue. Cancer like that in a whole family doesn't come out of the blue. It's got to be something to do with the nuclear stuff in there. But the government, of course, because they don't want to pay reparations or they don't want to fix it or anything, they go, no. This medical thing happened, this medical thing happened. And they stall and they stall and they stall, and they try to put it to something else when it was their own fault in the beginning.
Well, a similar thing happened here with the bombs they dropped down there in South Australia.
Maralinga.
Yeah.
What do you name down there?
Maralinga
bombs. The defence personnel that were sent in, and I've known a couple of old fellas there, were mates of mine that were in the defence forces. They were sent in without any protective gear whatsoever. Yet any of the foreigners, the British particularly, that went in to clean up, they were fully suited, fully protected. But Australian Defence Force people, nothing, just get out there and tidy it up. And they're dead now, they're mates of mine, they're dead from cancer.
Yeah, well, that's what it's so important to, like, support, especially, like, mob in the NT. You know, Muckety had the nuclear waste dump, but they're going to look for another site for that sort of stuff.
Definitely.
And, you know, you've got Blackfellas dying, they're just going to say it's drugs and alcohol. It's not drugs and alcohol, and, like, this is one of the impacts that, like, while mining affects climate change, we talk about climate justice because so many things are going to affect our community. And, you know, this government already doesn't stand up for, like, mob living in remote areas and that sort of stuff. So, like, what access do they have to, like, legal avenues to say, like, now you're affecting our health and that sort of stuff? So it's like none of this stuff can go ahead.
I think it's important for us to have, especially us, the seed mob, for us to have our land councils on board with this stuff that we're advocating for, and that we're interested in it, because I don't know, I think with the support from them, from our land councils, and, you know, getting them on board and the stuff that we're talking about, it's for all of us. We're all being affected by it, and there's not an interest in, especially in my community, there's no interest in it. We're busy doing other stuff, or, you know. But, yeah, I'd love the support from our New South Wales Land Council, and it'd be good too, having the Central and Northern Land Council in the Territory supporting our cause and, you know, what we're doing for our mob. But yeah, especially, you know, we're all young fellas and whatnot, like we need the support from, yeah, the old fellas to, this is another topic for Aboriginal affairs in a way, you know, like...
Another issue.
Yeah, it is another issue, and it's only come up, you know, the past 10 years, I think.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's another issue that has to be addressed and has to be acted on.
Yeah. I think one of the reasons why I say it's the most important issue that we could be fighting for right now is because it potentially can make everything else that we have on the table worse, whether it's land
banks,
health, education, access to water, and, you know, our right to live on our country.
Mm.
There's so many things that are at stake here.
That's right. It's no good if country's sick and gone if we've lost it, you know.
Yep.
Land rights and
she'll
that sort
get better,
of stuff.
But it'll take her a while.
No, Mother Nature can sort things out, but it'd be good to... She needs some help with it from us.
She's going to need a lot of help.
Otherwise, she'd just take a turn and turn on us all.
Yeah.
You were going to say something.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, we are the custodians of this land as much as she's the custodians of us. If we take care of her, she'll give back and take care of us. But we're not taking care of her right now. We're really not.
Oh, yeah.
And she'll be mad. She'll get mad. She'll get angry. She'll throw all these thunderstorms and that destroy all the white fella's homes and stuff.
She'll throw the buildings and the bridges.
And stuff like that, eh?
Yeah.
My home's broken.
Of your hand. And
she don't discriminate, eh? She's throwing those ice rocks at everyone. Yeah. All of us.
And people say that there's no real solid proof of there being climate change. There was solid proof of there being climate change in the 70s. No one listened to the scientists in the 70s when they were saying that climate change was an issue.
Yeah.
Now, it's been the hottest spring in many, many years. And today,
in itself,
is just damned hot. Mm. It was really bad today. And that's just a normal summer day now.
Mm.
You can't imagine what a hot day in Queensland would be. And this is in the southeast of Queensland. This is where it's normally cool. I feel for our brothers out west in the Northern Territory and out of Uluru. They're going to be sweltering. And that's people dying. That's a lot of people dying. My nana talks about how when she used to live up in Darwin, they used to call the summer heats the suicide heats because people would just get a funny idea in their head, and because it's so hot, they just commit suicide. and that'll be happening all over the country. You needed to fix this problem. The white fella needed to fix this problem that they caused ages ago, and it shows something that now the black fellas are having to stand up and say this is a problem. Fix it. It shows something.
For sure. And we being the oldest culture in the world, there's a lot of ancient knowledge there. We can lead the way.
Yeah, I would.
But they don't like to.
I would love to actually go around to different countries and just get them, because there are so many stories like in our history where we talk about our Dreamtime stories, talking about temperature variances and that sort of stuff, and to get that out in like one central place and talk about, well, this is like. We don't need scientists to tell us, like, this is what's been happening for 1,000 years. We've got it in our stories. But then talk about now and you can see the difference. Mm. Like, actually have traditional owners talking about what's happening and, like, how it's changed. Because we know those changes. And it's, yeah, I think one of the things that we're kind of inspired by is we are the oldest living continuing culture on this, in this world. And, like, we've lived off this land sustainably for generations. So if it's done in the past, we can do it again.
We ran this country.
Yeah.
Not all that long ago. What, something like 15 or 20 generations ago?
Yeah.
Not even
where there's probably 4,000 generations of our own mob.
Yeah.
Where our history goes back behind us. We ran this country not all that long ago. So it's a crying shame. It's criminal to see what's taken place today. And a stupid Prime Minister like Abbott wanting to bury his head in the sand and pretend it's not happening at all. You know, that's just outrageous. That a clown like that can be the leader of this country.
Yeah.
And it's not only the fact that he can be the leader of this country, it's the fact that while he's also leading this country, he's leading it in international affairs. Everything he does reflects Australia. And people think that Australia really like to have all them asylum seekers locked up in these Auschwitz-style concentration camps. Yes. And people think Australia really likes to destroy the Great Barrier Reef. The reason that I fight for climate change is it's stark in my mind the moment it happened. I was on a flight from Melbourne back to Brisbane. I'd just come back from a convention or something or other. And I had two Polish people sitting next to me who were visiting their daughter in Brisbane. And I talked to them about how Abbott wanted to dredge the reef. And just the look of outrage and disgust in their eyes. And they just screamed at the top of their voice and said, no, the Great Barrier Reef is not only an Australian asset, it's an asset for the world. Mm. It is a wonder of this world. Mm. Reefs don't occur like that very often. There has to be very set conditions. And by rooting with the conditions, you ruin the reef. And it's something that will never come back. Not in our lifetimes, not in our children's lifetimes, not for 100,000 generations.
Yes, no, you've got a good point there. What do you do when you're not actively involved in politics and things?
I'm completing school right now. I go to a flexible learning centre run by Edmund Rice Education Australia. Okay. I dropped out of mainstream because it wasn't my thing. Mm. And I've just finished year 11 and I'm now continuing into year 12. And basically, I got into a constitutional convention earlier this year and met a young man named Wilfred, who's another black fellow. And the constitutional convention sparked my desire to learn more about politics and stuff. And then Wilfred sent me an invite along to the Seed Summit, and then I got into that, and it sparked my desire for fixing our climate and stuff. So hopefully in the future, I've been offered a scholarship to go to university, and hopefully I'll be doing a political science in university and becoming a Greens member. Well, that's my goal currently.
Go on, boy. Go on, son. You're right.
Yeah.
Good one.
I think that's the thing that Seed brings to the AYCC as well, is that we're bringing culture and stories to these places that are being, you know, affected by mining. When we were up in Melbourne, we went and talked to like all the big four banks, like NAB, Westpac, Commonwealth, and
ANZ.
That's them. We shared our declaration, we came up with them, but we had mob from the Queensland coast, Murray mob from up there, like saying, you know, sharing their stories, connection to the reef you know, that's a unique part that Seed brings to the...
Well, there must be stories about that being sacred site for them mob.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. Definitely, mm. definitely. And mm. I think creation stories too will come
creation
underneath
stories
that.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. That's the thing that we bring to the Australian Youth Climate Coalition is, you know, that unique story to tell.
Yes. Caleb, you're saying the mainstream education system wasn't your thing. Tell us a bit more about that.
When I was younger, I lost a lot of grandparents. I lost three grandparents and a cousin within the space of 3 years, and I got really depressed. And then I was going to school at a school in the Brisbane suburbs, and I was heading from Redcliffe, so it was an hour-long train ride and stuff every day, and it was really taxing on me. And I was getting bullied at school as well, and then I come home, and I didn't have the best relationship with my older brother, and that was a bit physically abusive as well. So I didn't... I was just all out of sorts in my younger years. And I dropped out of mainstream school because I just got to the point where I couldn't get up out of bed in the morning because I couldn't find anything happy within my day. Like, it was all just another uphill battle for me to do. And I couldn't see a point in it. And I went to a different mainstream school. Then I went to a Klondike Beach State High School. And I was still depressed at that point in time, and I didn't see any point in it. And the chaplain recommended me to Deception Bay Flexible Learning Centre, and I gave it a go, and I sorted it, had a look at it, and it was one of the best decisions of my life because it's something that's really gotten me to this point in time. Like, I've had a lot of support over the years from black fellas who were teaching at school, like a deadly man called Fred Leone, who's rival MC of Impossible Odds. He's a great teacher and a great fellow to know. I've had support with in-school stuff. I had a teacher, Joanne Campbell, who is my absolute favourite teacher I've ever had. She was basically a blood auntie by the time she'd moved into an Isle of Flexi to help out there. And she got me hooked in a lot of these different political stuff, and she really helped me out. And I've slowly worked my way through my depression, and now I'm doing a lot of this stuff and trying to get mob at Deception Bay to come out of their shell and do a lot of stuff that I'm doing because it's not hard and it's stuff that will set you up for ages. Like the stuff I'm doing right now looks great on a resume. It's really, it gives you another thinking pattern with a lot of political stuff. Like when before I started doing the politics, I didn't understand anything about the Australian political system. I didn't understand how it affect blackfellas. I didn't understand how it affect me especially. And now that I've done it, I can see all of the flaws and faults in it, but I can also see all of the good things about it. So you sort of weigh it up now, and that just comes from learning about it. And it's just something that's amazing, really. I thank Deception Bay every day for allowing me to continue my education in a way that was easy for me to continue it.
Good story. My guests, three young First Nations people in the studio with me today, Larissa Baldwin-Roberts, Clayton Simpson, and Caleb Scanlon, all joining me. Range in age from 16 to 28. They're deadly young fellas here. It's very encouraging. Very encouraging from an old fella that's been around since before the 72 embassy there on the lawns of Old Parliament House. It's very encouraging to hear you young people talk. And there's a few other issues I want to talk about, raise with you, like constitutional recognition and things like that, what your thoughts are, you know.
Here we go.
And I know these fellas love it because they're all wearing the big R on their shirts.
Gammon.
Yeah, no. But before we go there. Before we go there. The Seed Summit, Larissa, when was it?
It was October long weekend. We took 50 young people down to Melbourne and I was one of the facilitators down there. And I suppose I can talk as a facilitator, but these guys were actually participants. So it was about just bringing young kids together, young blackfellas together who have a love of country and just being like, how can we protect it and where's your role in this? And
was it all First Nations people or a mixture?
It was all First Nations.
Was it really? Okay.
Yeah. And we had a speaker. We had some really deadly speakers like Uncle Sam Rubin come down from the Torres Strait, talked about the climate fight up there. And we had Nellis Kennedy Howard.
Yep.
From, she's Navajo.
The Navajo Nation.
All right.
Yeah. She came over from the US and talked to us about the fight, about cutting down in like the mining and
coal mining.
They've shut down 200 coal burning facilities in their land.
Really?
And in America and around. It's like $1 billion industry that they've shut down with those 200 coal mining facilities alone.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. All led by like First Nations in America. So, you know, it just brings home the point that like if we want to work towards climate justice, then Indigenous peoples all over the world have to be at the forefront. And part of that is like we have to take control of our country.
And there's more and more of the dominant culture, settler society, that are starting to align themselves with our recognition, our demands for, like you're saying, climate justice. You drive around the country and you'll see shut the gate. Sign, you know, the campaigns to stop the coal seam gas mining and stuff like that. So there's and that's important, is it not?
Yeah, it's really important.
The support and to be able to have their mob come in behind us or stand with us on these issues.
Yeah, and you have a lot of like, AYCs is just an example of one organisation, but there are so many, you know, social justice organisations around the world, around Australia that are just like, we need Aboriginal people in here to talk about what's happening to their country because that's the message, like. You can talk about farmers or, you can just talk about everyday people, but people who actually have connection to the country and, like, they're so, I guess, they just want to put an Aboriginal voice to the cause and, like...
Like a token gesture type thing?
No, not like a token gesture. Right. Like, it's more of a,
Reinforce their campaigns or...
Not to reinforce their campaigns. I guess it's, like... In Australia, we can't stop mining companies unless Aboriginal people are given the right to choose between mining or renewable energy or some sort of other business on their country. And right now, the government's not doing that. And GetUp or AYCC can't come out and say, hey, you shouldn't be doing this to Aboriginal people. But there are Aboriginal people that are already saying, hey, we don't want this. And it's about putting a microphone in front of them.
Right, allowing them the voice.
So it's like stepping down.
The opportunity.
Yeah.
Yes.
So there's a movement around that, and it's actually really good, yeah.
That is good.
Yeah.
Because all we're hearing at the moment are the Noel Pearson, Marcy Langton,
Tony
Mundine. Your leader. Your leader.
My leader.
Yeah,
your leaders.
Your leaders. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Clayton's leaders.
Uncle Noel.
Yes, must say morning to all the Cairns mob up there through BBM. Yeah. good morning to you all.
But
Now, there's a number of other issues as well as climate, but I like the way you have made it the priority because, like you say, if we haven't got healthy country, you know, that's not had suffered the negative impacts of climate change, well, what's the good of land rights to us and these other things, you
what's
know?
What's the good of a big dirty hole in the ground?
Yeah. So I like the way you've highlighted that. What's the feeling with some of the older mob, our mob, around that have been there pushing for health and housing and education and land rights and these sorts of things, you know, sovereignty, treaty, and then your young fellows are saying, hang on, your mob, what about climate change? What about climate justice?
I think the idea has been expressed that the old mob are definitely very tired from all of the fights that they've been fighting already. And
We're tired, don't you worry.
That's it. And you should be allowed to rest, which is why I think it's good that Indigenous youth are taking up the lead. And words that I do remember from the Seed Summit are, this may very well be our fight. And it might be. We might be here sitting like you are right now at the age of 60 and talking to another group of young Indigenous fellows who've got another fight. Every generation has their own fight, and this could be our fight. Yeah. And given the way that white fellows have hidden and not acknowledged until late, 40 years after they had evidence of climate change, we got to fight hard to fix it now. Because it's still going to be an issue, but if we fight now, we can negate a lot of the effects of the issue.
Yes, yes.
I think we're smarter too now. Not smarter than our old mob, but I think a lot smarter than a lot of white fellas give us credit for.
Most certainly.
Definitely. We've grown up with activists in our family. Like, we know, I've had a lot of people say that they're really surprised about how Seed have taken control of, like, what they want to do in their communities and how they get out and spread the message and that sort of stuff. I'm like, really? We got brought up on this stuff. Yeah. Like, do you know what I mean? Yeah. As much as we got old Dreamtime stories, we got stories of resistance that are, like, just as powerful. And all the old people that, like, we've spoken to have been just like, yep, yous are doing the right thing. Because they know that we're not stepping away from all the issues that are on the table. It's just that this is just inclusive of a lot of things.
Certainly is. That's right. There's a lot of things come under the umbrella of climate justice. We've got a caller on the line. Let's see who we've got. Welcome to Let's Talk. Who we got?
Tiger, it's Bernice Kelly calling from Cairns.
How you going?
Good.
These fellas thought I was joking.
Hearing all these young people talking in scientific language.
Hey, they're deadly for young black fellas, eh?
Well, my daughter's doing a science degree. She's studying to be an entomologist.
All right.
Oh.
It took me 6 months.
Hey, what's that? An entomologist? opens up your stomach or something, or what?
they study insects.
Oh, yeah. Insects, right, yeah. Okay.
And she's specialising in native bees.
Oh,
look at it. Yeah.
There's an important part.
So, you know,
it's
music to
nature.
My ears.
Yeah. What were you on about?
Good.
It's actually, when we had the guys at the Seed Summit, they were really, people were really impressed that they weren't just studying, like, you know, the usual, like, everyone thinks they're lawyers or they're, like, in health. There are so many guys studying environmental science degrees.
Well, that bee is a very important part of the ecosystem.
Yeah.
Like,
no bees.
If he's not around, well, we're not going to have the
pollen.
The pollen, cross-pollination,
we're not
gonna
eat.
Plants.
That's
we're not going to have the food. Yeah. That's right, yeah.
We're not going to eat.
Well, thank you very much for that, and let's hope that young one of yours...
Just say one thing, but you know, what you guys are talking about is so true, and I think what we've got to do is take, you know, there's a lot of white people out there who I know, we call them migaloos, eh?
Yeah, migaloos.
Migaloos, you know? And we need to take these people by the hand and take them along with this journey. And, Tiger, why I say that is the Victorian elections, 50% of the population did not vote.
Really? 50%?
50%.
And that's the mainstream now, settler society.
That's huge. They've just sworn in a government where people have stayed away in droves because they're not happy with either side of the government.
Yeah.
Mm.
But the thing is, they dropped the ball. I'm sorry, they dropped the ball. Because if you want to send a protest vote, if you really want to make a difference, you've got to vote. And you know there's a protest vote, and I can't say the A word over the radio because I'll get 10 years jail. But anyway, we need to educate Queenslanders that there is a way. And I know, talking to my community, I come from Babinda Merrawinni, and there are a lot of blokes down there, farmers. They would just love to work with Aboriginal people and do land management programs.
Yep.
But it's the politicians that don't want us to come together.
It's always the politicians.
Yeah, absolutely. That's right.
Yep.
Let's maybe talk about how we can bring about real political change, because we're just talking, we're just blowing it in the wind.
Yeah.
Because the politicians make their decisions about all this. And when you got Tweedledee and Tweedledum in Parliament, there's never going to be a change. And the only way we're going to make a change is people power. And hearing you young people talk, that young fella yesterday, oh, my heart was bursting. Bursting with pride to hear that we got young people out there that are so switched on.
Yes, it's certainly encouraging.
Good on you, kids. Love you, love you.
All right, take care.
Thanks a lot, Bernice.
See ya.
Have a good one. Bye.
That makes us feel good as well, eh?
Yeah,
it feels good that old fellas, old elders and stuff, are supporting people. Our cause.
Yeah. And I think we can't go on until, it'll be harder to do what we want to do if we don't have support.
Yes.
We need support, and not just from, our elders, from non-Aboriginal people as well.
Like you said, we got to be holding them hands of the dominant culture mob settler society.
What was the little
bring them through with us?
The little quote: climate change is something that unites us. Could be something.
It could
that
be
unites
the issue
us.
That unites us.
Mm. Yep. Mm.
Well, that's right. That's right. Because they, with land rights, you mentioned land rights, and they shudder in fear and think you're looking at
their backyard.
That's right. That's right. But climate change, different story.
Different story. These mob might actually be able to protect our place in this country.
Yes.
Yeah. But it's the worldwide story.
Yes.
It's being led by Indigenous people right across the world, and it's so inspiring. It's like, it doesn't matter what fight it is in, Aboriginal history, all these trailblazers inspire us. We love hearing their stories and having their support and telling us, this is how it was done.
Come on in. Don't worry. It's okay. Oh, now I'm being told to shut up. Did you see the...
We saw that.
Yeah. Oh, my God. The respect for people, but I don't know. Anyway. Back to constitutional recognition. What are your thoughts as young people? What does it mean to you?
I'm sorry. Constitutional recognition is not what, from a lot of my knowledge, what Indigenous people in general want. We'd prefer to have treaty. We'd prefer to have something that recognises us as not a body of the Australian populace, but a body that was here before the Australian populace, and that was another. It was all these different 200 plus nations before Whitefella came and killed us and took our land away and took all of our pride from us. We'd like to be recognised like the Maldives are. We'd like to be recognised like that and given the right and respect of 60,000 years of living here, not recognised in a constitution that was not our constitution. We didn't help make that constitution when it was first made. We've never helped the constitution. The constitution has never helped us, and nor should it help us. We can have a treaty that helps us that would work way better.
Larissa, is this constitutional recognition a distraction, a bit of a smokescreen type thing to try and distract us?
Absolutely.
How do you feel? What do you feel?
I feel like it's a complete distraction. There are so many more important issues, whether it's, climate change is one of them, health is one of them, housing is one of them, youth suicide
treaty,
is one of
sovereignty,
them.
Sovereignty, all that.
But, I've always been taught and, listened to a lot growing up, and I've always supported treaty. And I just can't support a campaign that has just been rolled out with billions and billions of dollars behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're taking, how do you justify all these billions of dollars in a constitutional recognition campaign when you've just removed all this money from legal services?
Mm,
it's just
and
crazy.
And impose legislation in the territory and and across Western Australia, where they're removing people off communities and bulldozing down the houses.
150 communities to close. Like, it's so transparent. And we know that, like, that's one of the things. Like, that's about mining leases.
Mm.
It's not about anything else.
Country, controlling country. That's right.
It's controlling country. It's about how do we get the money out of these communities. It's like, I can't support a campaign that just has all this money in it when it's not the right thing for Aboriginal people right now.
The media and the education system of this country, the mainstream media and the education system of this country, has a lot to answer for.
Yes.
Yep.
What are your thoughts, Clayton?
What are my thoughts on what story?
On the media, the mainstream media.
They've got a lot to answer for.
Because all we hear is Noel, Marcia and Warren. We don't hear any dissenting views.
Yeah. Well, I think that they've...
And then
they
there's
pick
the education
and choose
system.
Their culturally approved Aboriginals first. They pick the ones that, you know, that have speak on behalf of everyone, that have got this degree, got this, fair enough.
Make out they speak on behalf of everyone.
Make out.
But I feel that, you know, media's got the power to educate not just Aboriginal people, but socially non-Aboriginal people on Aboriginal issues, and doesn't always have to be grog, alcohol, child abuse. What about land rights issues? Yeah. What about treaties?
What about climate justice?
What about, especially, you know?
But also, what about celebrating our wins?
The achievements.
Yeah,
that's right.
We have so many achievements in
our
community. Yeah. So important.
And you don't see that being
in the last
60
years alone as well.
You know, that's the thing that keeps me going. Like, as you know, I'm a bit older than these guys, but you know, I've gained a lot of skills from being given the opportunity by so many blackfellas to, you know, get to where I am and that sort of stuff. And I just have such a responsibility to show these guys, you know, this is what I know. This is how I know how to do it, and I can support you. But, all the good stories in our communities, I never see them, and that's, I think, what makes me sad as well, because we have so many deadly stories, so many wins. It's just the stereotype is wrong.
I think as a society too, like as an Aboriginal society, I know back home in Walgett, like we've got this, I don't know, the ones that are always doing stuff for themselves, you got ones that bring them down, and that's not healthy.
Yeah.
But even, like, with the whole media stuff, like, I just feel that we, like, look what happened with the Deadlies last year, like, took away all the funding with that to celebrate the wins or to embrace the wins or, you know, positive stories, but then cut all that, put into a recognition campaign that we have. I think at the time, I reckon 80% of us had no idea about it, that we weren't even in a constitution or whatnot. And, you know, they say that I've spoken with fellows that work with the recognised campaign and of course they're very blinded by it and very, don't see the real side of the fence.
They're committed to their views and things.
It's going to right the wrongs of the past. Yeah. Yep, fair enough. It's going to tick the box for a Liberal government.
I see it as being similar to the sorry.
The
apology thing. Yeah. You know? We've got a caller on the line. Let's see. Welcome to Let's Talk. Who we got?
It's your Auntie Lilla here, darling.
Hey, good day, Aunt. How are you?
Good. I'll be quick. I know it must be getting close to... ending, but I just want to say how wonderful it is to hear these three young voices. It does make your heart sing, I tell you. And I just think they're just absolutely terrific, and I congratulate the three of you on what you're doing and how you're thinking and the way you're going. Makes my heart sing. And I'd like to offer the three of you a scholarship in the Black Card course when and if you can come. Yeah. That'd be really wonderful if you could participate.
Thank you.
Go on.
I'll see if I can. I will.
We're up for it. We're up for anything.
Yep.
Very good. Bye, Jane.
Okay, then.
Right
all on, the mate. Best of all, and good on your time for having these three young people on.
Thanks, mate.
Take care, Aunt.
Thank you, Aunt.
Take care.
We've got to hear more from these fellas, yeah.
Absolutely.
Right on, Aunt. Thanks a lot, eh?
Thank you.
See you now.
Bye. Have a good evening. Good day.
Well, there you go. An offer of a scholarship to do a two-day black card course. They're worth about $1,500 or something. And it's real solid, real deadly.
Yeah.
Auntie Lilla Mary Graham run it.
Yeah.
And Mundanara, my daughter, works there. And it's an amazing course.
Yeah?
It's an amazing course. Yes. Amazing.
Heard of it. We're doing it.
You Google. But that's also Black Card. Black Card, yeah.
They talk about media stereotypes and that sort of stuff. Like, people say that Aboriginal youth are disengaged.
Google straight away.
Google
straight away.
He's on there. He's got it.
Ask Uncle. When I was a bunch of uncle, I said to me, I call Uncle. I ask Uncle. Who's Uncle? Uncle Google.
Uncle Google.
Sorry. It was your mob that said that. I was down in Colorado not long ago. But sorry, what you were saying there?
We're just like, you know, there's so many stereotypes around Aboriginal youth about we're disengaged, we're into drugs and alcohol, we don't care about our communities.
Mm. Yeah.
We're all working, studying, activists, fighting for our country, and we've always been doing this. And I don't feel like that we are, that is who we are, and it's definitely not, I feel like there are young people that are, you know, falling by the wayside, so young blackfellas, but they're also not being given the right opportunities or the right support.
And they're looking too.
They're looking.
They're looking. And yeah.
It comes down to, at the end of the day, the way that the media portrays a lot of black people as well. The media has a very distinct portrayal of blacks in Australia being druggos, doing a lot of alcohol, pedophiles, drinking alcohol and stuff. Yeah. And at the end of the day, the vast majority of Australian Indigenous Aboriginals don't do any of that.
That's right. Yeah. Good point to make. We've got to wind up. It's all news time. Thanks for coming in, Caleb.
Thanks for having us.
Larissa and Clayton.
Yeah, cheers.
Hey, thanks very much.
Yeah. Thank you.
We better make an appointment to come back in a few weeks' time.
Oh, we'll be back.
All right, make sure. It's time to go. Join us tomorrow for Let's Talk on your local First Nations station.